Hello. I think we're live. Let me check. Make sure that you guys can hear us. Sound output. Yay, microphone. Let's see. Are we coming in? Check one, two. Check one, two. Can you hear us? And nothing.
Hello.
How about now?
Hello?
Sweet Sin, can you hear us? Okay, because we're not getting...
She's saying yes.
Okay. Well, if you can hear us, that's good. That's all that matters.
Usually we pick up some kind of feedback.
Well, I know. That's why I tried to switch that. Well, hello, everybody.
Hi.
Welcome to Conspiracy Theory Thursday. Hope you guys are doing good.
Happy Thursday.
We're doing good, just a little tired. Where were we today, babe?
We went to the gym. Our gym had like a family night. They did pizza and drinks and music and the pool. And our 2.5-year-old didn't want to get out of the pool. And
yeah, was throwing a fit and embarrassing us in front of everybody. So it was a good time. And our infant seems to be thinking he can start to crawl out of the crib. So this is going to be fun.
Yeah. Guys.
Hello, Christian Thinker. Nice of you to join us.
Pennsylvania,
okay.
Indiana.
Wow. That's awesome.
Do we have any fellow New Mexicans in the house?
Well, we'll see if Dento gets on. Usually he's the only one that I see. Okay. So tonight,
A gym that feeds you pizza. They don't normally do that. This was just a family night. And matter of fact, Seth and I actually did some meal prepping before and took our own dinner because we didn't want to eat pizza. So
yeah, I'm kind of heavy, so I've been trying to lose some weight. So we'll see how good
Washington
that goes.
State.
Ooh, I went to school in Montana, so I know that part of the Pacific Northwest. Romania. Oh my gosh, that's so cool.
Do you say Raris? Is that how you say it? Raris?
Yeah, that's a cool name.
Beautiful.
Okay, so tonight's going to be a little bit of a shorter night. As you can tell, we started early just because we're kind of both tired. And so we're going to do a couple of points here, and then we're going to call it a night. So it's going to be probably about 30, maybe 35 minutes. We'll see. Okay, but as you guys know, welcome to Conspiracy Theory Thursday. My name's Seth. This is Brittany. If this is your first time chiming in, we're glad that you guys are here. We start every week. How?
We start off by reading God's word because that's what we stand on. It's our foundation.
Right.
We believe in probably a lot of conspiracies that a lot of people don't believe in. But we also...
A lot of Christians don't believe
in. A lot of Christians don't believe in. And so we always like to start it off with this verse because it tells us that there are people who conspire, right, against God and his people.
Yep. So we're going to start with Psalm chapter 2. And it says, "Why do the nations rage and the people plot in vain? The kings of the earth set themselves and the rulers take counsel together against the Lord and against his anointed, saying, 'Let us burst their bonds apart and cast away their cords from us.'" So we like to start off with that because it says, "Why do the nations rage and the peoples plot in vain?" And that Hebrew word, as I've described before, is like meditate or conspire or think continually on hurting the Lord and hurting his anointed, which is you and I. And so we can see that the Bible talks about conspiracy. There's something secret. The nations are planning something. The kings of the earth are planning something. And if you study conspiracy theories for any sort of amount of time, you know that's true because the elite, and if you do any study into them, you can figure out what they're doing. So we like to start there because we approach everything from a biblical worldview. We approach everything looking at it through a lens of scripture, and we need to understand what scripture is and how it communicates to us and how the Lord uses it to speak to us. So that being said, last week we started something pretty exciting, and I'm pretty excited about it because
actually the week before.
Oh, it was the week before. Yeah, last week we had to cancel. Got really busy. So Thursday nights are, I don't know what it is. I think I've told you guys this before. Yeah. It's like spiritual warfare. Attack, warfare day or something because We just get attacked like crazy, and it's crazy. So be
and
praying for us.
I don't know if
us.
You guys notice, but every time I get on, I start to yawn. Like, I don't yawn any time before that, but it's like I get on the show and for some reason I start yawning. So it's not that I'm bored, guys, or that I don't want to be here. I just
she's just nice. She doesn't like to admit that I'm boring.
No, he's not boring. I just I'm lacking oxygen, I guess. That's like a
yep. Well, I suppose so.
Here I
so,
go again.
Yeah, but the week before we started with something looking into 9/11. Okay, and if you guys search on YouTube, if you just search 9/11 or something, you get some pretty crazy stuff.
Yeah.
And so we're approaching it from a different point of view. Okay, mm-hmm. I am a structural engineer. I design bridges for a living. I've done vertical structures, including. Foundation design, retaining walls, things like that.
And I'm a structural engineer's wife. So I've heard about structures and just kidding.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Seth just got a new tattoo. I'm so sorry.
And
babe.
She just slapped it.
Okay. I'm so, guys, as you might know from watching us, I'm really super expressive and I'm very touchy, especially when I get like really excited.
Yeah, so it's okay. We started looking at the collapse theories that the government has released from a structural engineering point of view. Yeah. And so you're not going to see this in a whole lot of places because most people doing research are not engineers and they're not, I guess, well-versed in the terminology. They haven't really dug into the reports that have been released by the government concerning the collapse theories of the Twin Towers and of Building 7. And so...
Yeah, and so we're not approaching it as like, oh... it was this president or this happened or the government. Like we're literally right approaching it from a scientific standpoint.
Yep. So it's not really conspiracy
at
all.
Like it's research, right? It's something like Seth knows exactly what these structures should look like, what, you know, so can you just give us, I guess maybe for those who weren't here the first week, a little background of kind of the organization. Like this isn't just something you're doing your own research.
Yeah. Well, thanks for bringing that up. So I was about to go into that, and I belong to a nonprofit organization called Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, and we are the leading organization in calling for a reinvestigation into the actual collapse, like the reason for the collapse, because what the government has put forth and what we're going to be going over in the next few weeks, you guys will be able to agree with us that they're, at least from a structural point of view, from an engineering point of view, it doesn't make any sense. What they've presented, their models, their assumptions, they're erroneous, they've omitted certain things from their models that don't make any sense. And if I was to do that when I was designing a bridge, it would fall down. And so there's just a lot of approaches that the government has taken in their official narrative that is wrong, just straight up wrong. So
yeah, Linda, I would agree with your last comment.
Oh, what did she say?
She said 9/11. I'll say 9/11. 9/11 was an excuse for another war for the elite to make money.
Yeah, well, pretty much. But yeah, that's true. So I belong to this organization, and it's a really great organization. You guys should look into it. I've included a link in the description below. And actually, I kind of, you know, it was kind of clickbait with the thing that I posted on Facebook. You can find this information on the website that I listed below because I said you're not going to be able to find this information anywhere else. But it's kind of true. You wouldn't really know where to search unless you went to their website or you tuned in here. Yeah. So for those of you tuning in, you guys are getting it. Also, consider becoming a member at the Daily Renegade, guys, because once this video's aired,
it's gone. And
unless
I know
you're
you guys want to show your friends.
Yeah, you're a member at the Daily Renegade, not going to see it anymore. There's a lot of information that we're going to be presenting. Yeah. And so make sure that you guys are paying attention because this is stuff that you can use to get people to start to think of that. Maybe 9/11 was an inside job. Maybe there was controlled demolition of these buildings because the way that they say they collapsed, there's no way that they collapsed that way.
Yeah. Okay.
So
where did we leave off?
That's a great point to start. So 2 weeks ago, we kind of did some background into the Twin Towers, into Building 7. And I kind of gave an overall layout about what FEMA and NIST had said, that there's three basic reports that have been filed. You know, I gave the timeline for let's see, let me just go back in my notes here. The timeline, let me see, where is it? Sorry, guys, should have had this prepared. Okay. Well, I released a timeline, or I talked about a timeline with you guys about when the NIST reports came out mm-hmm. and when the FEMA report came out. So it was, I think it was about 6 months after mm-hmm. the event, FEMA released their report after doing their investigation. About 9 months after that, NIST released their first report on the Twin Towers, and like 7 years after that, they released the report on Building 7. Okay, so it took them 7 years to finish their investigation into Building 7. So last week we talked, or 2 weeks ago, we talked about some of that stuff. And then we started to dive into the model, and there are a number of problems with the NIST model. Particularly, we started with Building 7. Okay. And so for those of you who don't know anything about Building 7,
I had no idea about
Building 7. World Trade Center Building 7 was the third tower that fell on 9/11 2001. Okay. And not a lot of people know that this tower fell, but for a couple of reasons. One, it took several hours for it to fall. It didn't fall till later in the afternoon. The first plane hit the building around 9 a.m. The South Tower, I think, was hit first, and it fell, and then the North Tower fell after that, and then World Trade Center Building 7 fell a few hours after that. So, you know, the news was already scrambled.
And there was, just real quick for clarification, there was a few buildings around there, like Building 4,
yeah,
Building
3. Yeah, well, Building 7, so there was Building 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 at least, right? And so if you go to that website, we have a map of everything, and you can see
it all. The map is really cool, too, guys, because you can kind of see, like, where Building 7 was.
Yeah, so Building 7 is 350 feet north of the North Twin Tower, okay, and it is in the light debris zone, as FEMA defined the debris zone, okay. So what that means and why that's important is, one, no plane hit Building 7. It was a 47 story tall building, pretty tall. It was supposedly collapsed due to fire, okay. And
47, yeah, I mean, that's
and being in the light debris zone, there wasn't a whole lot of debris that hit it. In fact, there's pictures of it lit on fire with windows still intact and everything. Like it didn't seem like there was any structural instability happening while the fires were going on and stuff like that. So you can find those pictures online. You can go to the website and see that. But last week we dove into the first point of the we present 13 points, yes, that are wrong. 12 points that are wrong with the NIST report on Building 7. Okay, and so we dove into the first one. Do you remember what the first one was?
The first NIST report?
Yeah, or the first problem that we discussed in the NIST report. The beam?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Oh,
kind of.
What was it?
It was the bearing seat width. So if you guys remember,
oh yes, because it was supposed to be 13 or 12.
It was supposed to be 12 inches wide,
but it was only 11.
They only defined it as 11, and that was important because we saw through some other analysis, through the work that the University of Alaska Fairbanks has been doing, if they actually modeled the bearing seat right, the right width, their model doesn't work. Okay, because the girder that supposedly fell and made the whole building collapse moved 5.7 inches, okay, which is over half. So the web of the girder was over the edge of the bearing, causing instability. But if it was actually 6 inches that it needed to go, there was still a little bit of space for that thing to go.
So would you say that numbers are very important in this?
Yeah,
kind of work.
But yeah, and that's the thing. Like, people are like, it's just an inch. What can that do? An inch in design is a lot. Okay.
Wow.
Especially when you're talking about a high rise steel frame building like this. Like, it details matter. That's why, you know, as a as a type five, as an engineer, I'm very detail oriented. Like everything has to be done to perfection. Any engineer who designed this building, he's a perfectionist.
Which is beautiful because that's the way that God made Seth so that he could be good at what he did. I could not be an engineer because all the buildings would fall because I don't like details.
Yeah. She'd be good at like, hey, let's do this. She'd be a good architect.
Yes. I would be a great architect.
She'd see the vision.
I have the big vision.
Like where it would go. But all the details are left to the structural engineers. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling you guys, like, this isn't like just because it went from 11 to 12. Like that's a big change. That's something that they left out. And they later admitted that. They made a mistake. I'm like, you took 8 years to make this report and you mess up on something like this. Like, it just doesn't make any sense. Okay. So that was the first point, was the bearing seat width that this girder gets. So maybe I should go back and explain how they think it fell. Right. Yes. So there was on the 13th floor of this building is where they think global failure happened. Okay. And so there was a fire in the northeast corner of this building. Mm-hmm. It supposedly heated the beams, mm-hmm. which pushed this girder off of its bearing seat. Okay. The girder fell. It caused the girder below to fall, which caused the girder below that to fall. And for 9 stories, it did that. Okay, so the column that was holding up that building, which was column 79.
If you guys are more visual people, then you need to kind of see what we're talking about, because I know I'm more of a visual person, so I would be sitting behind the screen like, what? You can go onto the website, right, and kind of see the data, and it gives you a little
search pictures. For project due diligence on the website, and you guys will be able to see the PowerPoint. We have a video up there of my friend Roland giving a presentation in front of ASCE about this. That's what happened. They think that this girder collapsed, brought 9 stories down with it. And then the column that was all these girders rested on was laterally unsupported for 9 stories and it buckled. Okay.
Which is just crazy.
Yeah. So, and we'll get into that in later weeks, but, the issue with that is, first of all, like we talked about last week, and that's why the bearing seat width was so important, because if that girder never falls, their whole collapse theory is done for. So just right off the bat, them having the wrong bearing seat width and the girder not even being able to move past the point where it'd be able to fall off the bearing doesn't make any sense. Okay, so we're just starting there. Like, their whole thing is already messed up because of the bearing seat. Okay, so but we're going to get into something else tonight, which may seem minute as well, but also kind of does ties into this girder issue here at column 79, okay? And so for those of you who don't know what a girder or a beam or a lateral bracing or a column is, okay? So how a building is designed is you have columns that go vertically, okay? Then you have girders which span from column to column, okay? And then you have beams which span from girder to girder, which hold up the floor, okay? And so those beams will have lateral supports in between them to carry, to help transfer the load down from the beams to the girders and then to the columns and eventually down into the foundation. So that's how a building works, okay? And each floor is taken into account. As you go down, your members get heavier, okay? And that's a term which means that your plates get thicker, your steel gets thicker. That's how the Twin Towers were built, and we'll see that here.
So do they take into account like what's going to be in the office, like weight and
so,
all that?
That's a great question. So when you're designing a building, you use what's called the IBC, the International Building Code, and you use ASCE 710, okay? And these codes are developed over years of testing, okay? And they define, so let's say your building is in risk category 1 or something like that, like a hospital or some emergency building like that.
Where there would be like a lot of people, a lot of weight coming into that.
Right. Okay. Or in a time of natural disaster, you'd need it to be one of the only buildings standing. You know what I mean? So, let's say you're in that risk category, you have certain loads that are taken into account for that risk. So you have certain live loads, which include, you know, people and moving carts and things like that. Okay, then you have dead load, which includes the concrete and the steel. Okay, if you're out, depending on where you're building, like in Chicago or something, you'd have a huge wind load on the building.
Oh, that's what I was going to ask too. Is it, do they do it according to like
in New York, you'd have a snow load, right? Mm-hmm. And so you take all of these loads into account. Like this is, it's a pretty extensive process,
that's intense.
It's all QA, QC'd, like the quality assurance that goes into this is just crazy. So that being said, we're going to kind of dive more into this girder connection to the column, because they also miss something in the NIST model that is very, very important, which again, if this was here, in their model is completely worthless because it stands. So the second issue that we're going to be talking about is that the NIST model left out web stiffeners. Excuse me, I was looking for the right word. Okay, web stiffeners. Okay, and web stiffeners are used to add more support on the web. So if you guys can imagine at the bottom of my wrist.
There we go.
Okay, so this is our girder. Okay, so the web stiffener is welded to the web here and then to the bottom flange. Okay, so they weld it here and it's a plate. Okay, it's a steel plate, which is probably, I don't even know how thick this thing was, a 3/4 inch thick stiffener. Okay, so this is a 3/4 inch steel plate that's meant to add lateral stability in case this girder wants to lock off its bearing seat.
Okay, that makes sense.
Okay, so the reason that this is important is because...
So that's like a lot of stability.
Because, yeah, so what did they say? What was the cause of failure?
Well, because of the load, right?
The girder, moved off its bearing seat.
Oh, yeah, you're right, yes.
Okay, so the girder moved off its bearing seat. Mm-hmm. And then just fell off and caused the global collapse. Okay. But if we had the right bearing seat width, and if they included the stiffeners at the end here, this thing,
which they did not include,
you see this thing right mm-hmm. here, babe.
Yep.
Yes. So it's probably, how far is it in? It's like an inch. Let's see. It doesn't say on there, that I can see right away, but it's an inch in from the end of the girder. So this stiffener plate is sitting, there's both of them on both sides of the web. They're welded to the web, they're welded to the bottom flange. And it's important that it's welded to the bottom flange because that's where the greatest shear force is gonna be at the support. It's important that they didn't include this because if that girder was to lock off, these stiffener plates are meant to add extra support so that it wouldn't fail. If it locked off, if the girder was able to lock off. Okay.
So what's their excuse then for that? Like, what are they?
They just omitted those stiffeners. They just straight up omit. They're right here in the shop drawings for the building, fabricated. We have pictures. This is what it looks mm-hmm. like, babe.
No, yeah, you did a great description.
We have pictures of the building, being constructed with those stiffeners in there. So they were definitely put in. Okay. But NIST decided, to make our theory work, we're not going to include those stiffeners in there, because if they did include the stiffeners, the girder wouldn't have failed.
So let me ask you from maybe the outside, little group. Do you think NIST was paid off to do that? Or you think that they just didn't have a way to describe what happened?
No, they're trying to cover something up. They're trying to cover up controlled demolition. And
why? What would be the purpose of NIST doing it?
Because NIST is a Department of Commerce branch. So it's a government entity.
Oh, okay. So I don't know if you had mentioned that.
I mentioned it 2 weeks ago. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So that's a good refresher.
Well, in FEMA, Federal Emergency Medical Agency, I think it is.
Okay.
Federal government.
Okay. Thinking, I don't know about you guys, but I'm like, okay, if I owned NIST, I'd be like, no, dude, is wrong.
Well, it's run by the Department of Commerce.
It's okay. Cool. Yeah. All right. Good to know.
Yeah. So, it's, everything is paid for by your tax dollars, you know, this report, all the people that went into this being paid by your tax dollars. So thank God for that.
I don't pay taxes. Just kidding. I pay taxes. I'm just kidding. Don't come after me.
Okay. And so if those stiffeners were included at the end of the girder, I can't reiterate this enough, that that girder could not have failed. Like, there's no way, one, that that girder walked enough based on the fire temperature to even move past the end of the bearing.
But if it did, it would have had a backup.
That's why those things are put in there. Okay. And we're going to get into, I think it might be the next point, about what, something else that's super important. Yeah. Okay. It'll be the next point. But I want to bring this up, because, NIST, we reached out to NIST, okay, to researcher David Cole. Okay, so David Cole was doing, who's a researcher into this area, and so people have been doing this. He's a, he may be part of AE 9/11 Truth, but if not, this was a quote that Michael Newman, who is a NIST public affairs person from NIST, this is the quote that he sent him about not including the stiffeners, okay? So the web, this is the quote, and I quote, "The web stiffeners shown at the end of the girder in Frankel drawing number 9114, which is the shot drawing for this particular connection, prevent web crippling. The structural analysis of World Trade Center 7 did not show any web crippling failures. Therefore, the web crippling plates did not need to be included in the models slash analysis. Again, we apologize for the length of time it took this to get this information to you. Thank you for your interest in the NIST World Trade Center investigation." So that's an assumption. They assume that these plates play no part in the structural analysis, so they just disclude them. This is a 3,000 people died on this day, and they think that they can get away with, therefore the web crippling plates did not need to be included in the model's analysis. You got to get, oh my gosh. First of all, and this is a point that we bring up, this Michael Newman guy is not an engineer. He's a public relations guy. So he may not even know what he's saying. He may have not consulted an engineer at all, and he just responded this way. So we thought that that was kind of funny. So that was the second point. We're going to do one more point tonight, guys, and then we're going to wrap up. Okay. And this next point also has to do with why the girder couldn't have walked off. Okay. So again, for those of you just tuning in, we're going over the collapse theory of World Trade Center 7 currently. I belong to an organization that is calling for a reinvestigation into the actual reason why the buildings collapsed, which we think is controlled demolition. NIST released two reports, one on the Twin Towers and one on World Trade Center 7, describing their collapse. NIST is a government entity, and so we have critiqued that report and come up with 12 points, and we're currently on point number 3. And their collapse theory was that fire heated this girder, or actually heated these beams to push this girder off of its column, causing it to fall, hit the next floor, causing lateral buckling in column 79. So keep that number in your guys' head.
79.
So you guys can bring that up with your friends. You actually know what these columns are referred to in the structural drawings themselves. So, okay. So the third point. So the first point was bearing seat width. Second point was they didn't include stiffeners at the end. Okay. Both of those, if they were correct, included correctly in the NIST models, would cause their model to, it wouldn't make any sense. Okay. This third one also is a huge one. Okay. So when you're building a column, when you're building a high rise building, okay, you include these columns, but you may be asking yourself, well, how do they get, you know, the girders to sit on these columns, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
How do they do it?
So, they put, you know, angle supports and stuff like that. But one of the big ways that they make sure that those girders stay where they're supposed to is by adding side plates to the column. Okay. So you have this H column or this I beam that's going vertically. Okay. And it has two inch.
Do you need me?
No. Okay. They have two inch thick steel plate running up the side of these things. Okay. And that extends past the edges of the flanges, and it's intended to keep the girder where it's at. So if you can imagine, you know, there's an I beam between my hands here and it can't go anywhere. It's like stuck. It's pushing up against those side plates. Okay. So babe, you can see this, how it's done. Okay, oh, yeah. So here's okay. your girder, here's your and column, and these are the side plates okay. here. So see how they extend mm-hmm. past the flanges? Mm-hmm. It's meant to
keep, holding it in.
Yeah, it's okay. meant to keep that girder in. See how the girder can't move mm-hmm. past here? Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's see. Oh, that's four. Okay. Which are welded and protrude. So these side plates protrude 1.8 inches past the flange. Okay. And the girder comes into that. Okay. So it's meant to keep that girder from moving. Okay. Let's see. The finite element analysis at the University of Alaska Fairbanks shows that with the beams heated to 600 degrees Celsius and the girder to 500 degrees Celsius per the NIST analysis, which we agree with, those are the temperatures reached in the building, the girder is trapped behind the column side plate after being pushed just 3.5 inches. So do you remember how many inches they said it moved? 5.7.
Oh, dang it. I'm not good with numbers, guys.
5.7 inches that thing moved. But if they included the side plates in their analysis, that girder can only move 3.5 inches.
But they said it moved 5.
Yeah. Causing it to fall off its bearing seat. Okay. Precluding any possibility of its web moving past the bearing seat, NIST apparently did not consider the side plate interference to have impeded the girder's movement.
And so they didn't mention that at all? Like, what was their rebuttal for that? Nothing?
Nope. Nothing.
Huh. Wow.
So those 3 points just...
In themselves. Like, to me, that's like enough.
Yeah, they completely obliterate the NIST report and their collapse theory for World Trade Center 7. It doesn't make any sense. There's no way that girder moved enough to fall off its bearing seat because the bearing was wide. There were stiffener plates welded to the web and the bottom flange, and there were side plates in the column constraining the movement of the girder itself. So... You know, NIST, it just goes to show you that, like, there's something being covered up here. Like, there has to be something that's going on.
Because why are so many things omitted? Why are things not being checked correctly?
So the reason that they're not including this kind of stuff is to make their model work.
Yeah.
So that they can give us a scientific answer, you know, which mm-hmm. here we are in 2019. This report was written in 2007, released in 2007. It's like 1,000 pages long. It takes a while to go through that. You know, what are we almost, we're 18 years from the event.
18
You think
years.
People are going to be passionate about it still? It takes a lot of work to be passionate about it. It takes you and I stepping up, wanting the truth, wanting the government to tell us what's going on, wanting the truth released to us. And not in just this area. We want truth released with us everywhere. With aliens, with the UFO technology, mm-hmm. with what was going on in Nazi Germany, which was with what was going on in Japan, in other places with regarding this tech. Like, we want the truth. We want it released.
The truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth.
That's right. Nothing but the truth. Okay. And so, guys, call for the truth. Yes. Do what you can. Get yep. out, get this information, go to the website, learn about it, bring it up, talk about it with your friends, talk about it with your family, spread the word, because they're covering something up. Their mm-hmm. official narrative released by the U.S. government does not make sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We've presented 3 of the 12 so far.
Yeah, I agree.
These are huge issues. These are huge issues that if a structural engineer was to do something like this, like I'm just baffled that like that an engineer would even sign off on this report after reading it and looking at it, looking at the drawings, looking at all the information. And that's what's hard, because you never know who's looking at it. You never know what the purpose is. And the sad thing is, and we're going to get into this later, is that ASCE is on board with this. The American Society of Civil Engineers, which I am a member of, they are the backing engineering organization for these collapse theories. And it doesn't make any sense. And so I filed a petition with engineers, or Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, calling for ASCE to want to do a reinvestigation as well. And so we've been trying to get this presentation into ASCE branches all over the nation. And we're having some success in California and Michigan and Florida and Texas. And
so is there anything that like the layperson can do? Like,
yeah, go on. So there's a petition on Architects and Engineers for 9/11truth.org. It's called the Bobby McIlvain Act. Bobby McIlvain died that day. And it's a petition calling for a reinvestigation. And so there's over 4,000 architects and engineers signed on to that petition, but a lay person could go on and sign on as well. If they are passionate about the truth, if they want to get the truth out, you can volunteer, you can spread the word, you can post things on Facebook and Instagram and all those social media platforms, calling out the government, calling out NIST, calling out FEMA, calling out engineers everywhere to take a serious look into this situation. Because as an engineer myself, we are held responsible for answering these questions, because it was a building that failed. A structural engineer is responsible supposedly for the collapse of this building if it wasn't controlled demolition. So it's very important that just from my, that's why I'm so passionate about it, because it's just, man, it makes us seem like weak, that we don't know how to design something or we don't know how to keep something up.
Yeah. And just a reminder for those who are maybe just tuning in, this is not conspiracy. This certain topic, we're actually hitting this from a scientific standpoint. Seth is a structural engineer, does belong to this organization that is pretty much a bunch of engineers coming together and saying, hey, this doesn't make sense scientifically. We really want to see the research redone. We need to see these things added together. So for those of you who are just tuning in, but I'm thankful for you and for the other men and women who have decided that they want to take a stand and they want to know exactly what happened.
Well, and guys, this is also like, I could be placing my reputation on the line by presenting this stuff and trying to get this stuff out there. But gosh, if you take an objective look at this information as an engineer, as a layperson, as anyone, you can't help but wonder, like, why are they omitting anything from their model? Why are
they? Well, we're only 3 points in, and I'm like, whoa, that was enough for me.
Why are they deliberately not including something? Mm-hmm. You know, like if I was just to not include shear stirrups in my girder and assume that it could take any shear force, you know, from the bridge deck and from anything like this, that thing would fail. And it would be my responsibility because I didn't include something that was supposed to be included, you know? So it doesn't make any sense. I can't stress that enough. So guys, we aren't here either to give you all of the facts, all of the details, because we just don't have enough time or to do that kind of research for you. But we want to give you a starting point. We want to present stuff to you that you can go and do some more research for yourself. We're not going to tell you how to think.
No.
The great thing about our country is that you have the opportunity to think for yourself. to develop your own opinions, to develop your own ideas, and we can discuss them, you know, respectfully. And so whatever your view is on this subject, just take an objective look. There's nothing worse, like, if you call yourself a researcher, if you call yourself a truth seeker, you have to take an objective look at everything. You can't go into any research with bias already developed. Otherwise, you're just going to filter all the information that you find through that lens. And so,
That's convicting.
Yeah, take an objective look at it, and you'll come to see because I was skeptical too. I was like, man, it was 9/11 really this like insight? There's no way someone could have pulled something off like that. And the more research you do into this stuff, just from a scientific standpoint, you're like, it had to have been an inside job. They had to have set explosives. They had to time it correctly. They had to do this and that. And so it's crazy about this, but
so exciting. This has been one of my favorite topics.
We'll be in this topic for a while, probably, just because there's a lot to talk about. So next week we'll go into a few more points, including shear studs. That's the word I was looking for. We'll go into the energy collapse theory that ASCE propagated, and then we'll go through the rest of our points. We'll go into
so much good information.
There's just going to be a lot. We'll talk about the limited metallurgical examination, how all of the steel was recycled within like a week. There was like three pieces of steel left for forensic analysis. So we're going to go into all of that and give you guys that information again to give you a starting place. But I think that's a good point for us to end tonight. Thanks for tuning in.
Yeah, we're so excited. We're thankful that you guys joined us. As always, we're just praying for you guys, praying that God would bless you and keep you and make his face to shine upon you. And like Seth likes to say,
don't be lazy.
Do the research.
That's right, guys.
Love you guys.
Okay, have a good night, guys.
Bye.